Welcome. This is East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona for today, Thursday, April 23rd. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. On Thursdays, we focus on Ahwatukee and Tempe. In Ahwatukee news, vote slated today on garbage pickup rate hike by Paul Marinak. Phoenix City Council is scheduled to vote today on a three-year series of trash pickup rate increases after hundreds of residents voiced questions and concerns over a six-week outreach effort by the Public Works Department. In public forums as well as digital avenues, residents raised concerns about affordability, recycling, bulk trash, broken cans, and whether lower-cost service options could be created for people who generate less waste. But city staff delivered a consistent message. Without a rate increase, Phoenix will struggle to maintain the level of solid waste service residents have come to expect. The proposal before the council would raise the monthly residential solid waste rate from the current $37.32 to $42.32 this July, then $47.32 in July 2027, and $51.32 in July 2028. The ordinance also would raise the curbside green organics subscription fee by tying it to one quarter of the base of residential solid waste rate. Public Works officials say the increase is driven by a cost structure that has outrun the last council-approved rate adjustment in 2020. Since then, staff costs have risen about 32%, trucks and equipment 52%, and construction costs tied to infrastructure 40%. The solid waste program faces a structural deficit of up to $20.8 million in fiscal 25-26, according to the department. And officials did not mince words about the stakes if the council says no. If a solid waste rate adjustment is not implemented for fiscal year 26-27, the city's ability to provide solid waste collection and post-collection services will be severely impacted, resulting in significant service reductions, staff reassignments, or layoffs, the report said. It adds that those cuts would undermine reliable collection, zero waste goals, upkeep of infrastructure, and compliance with city, county, state, and federal rules. That warning was consistent in city responses to public outreach efforts that included 11 town halls, a city survey completed by 6,729 residents, 94 email comments, 6 phone calls, and a digital push that reached hundreds of thousands of customers. At the neighborhood sessions, residents often pressed staff on why the increase is so large. The city's answer was direct. Inflation and rising operating costs have outpaced the smaller annual adjustments approved in 2020. Staff also told residents that Phoenix's growing customer base has not been enough to offset those rising costs. The city said it has added about 20,000 residences since 2020, but revenue has not increased at a rate sufficient to keep up with rising costs. Residents also asked whether Phoenix could simply outsource more of the work. Staff said the city already contracts out parts of the program, including recycling processing and material sales, hauling from transfer stations to the SR85 landfill in Buckeye, and composting operations. As part of its final recommendation, the city says it increased the SAR&R monthly discount from $3 to $5 in response to public and council feedback. Effective July 2026, that would leave the monthly rate for a 60-gallon container at $37.32. That adjustment was part of a broader retreat by staff after the initial proposal met pushback. According to a city report, officials reduced their original three-year recommendation from $17 to $14 after reviewing community and council feedback and identifying additional efficiencies. The final proposal now calls for three annual increases of $5, $5, and $4 instead. The city summed up that position in its formal report, saying the proposed rate increase is needed to safeguard resident expectations about reliable solid waste collection and processing and keep Phoenix free of litter and debris. The message residents repeatedly heard in public sessions was simpler. People can argue about the structure, discounts, and service options, but if the rate increase fails, the current level of service likely will not survive intact. Next, celebrating Jackie Robinson. Accompanied by family members, Ahwatukee resident Virgil Jackie Berry threw the first pitch at last Friday's Diamondbacks game as the team celebrated Jackie Robinson Day at Chase Field. The brother of retired municipal court judge Carol Scott Berry, also of Ahwatukee, Berry grew up in the East Lake Park neighborhood near the stadium. Black migrants lived in the segregated neighborhood and revered him for breaking Major League Baseball's color barrier. Also in attendance were Virgil Berry, Arbley Bishop, Cody Williams, Virgil Berry III, Grace Berry, Judge Carol Berry, and Jerry Williams. Up next, Post 64 comes to aid of member's widow by AFN News staff. American Legion Post 64 members are coming to the aid of the widow of one of their own. Legionnaire Stephen Gunny Parker, a 23-year Marine Corps veteran, passed away in March, leaving his widow Mary struggling. During his time in uniform, he deployed to Vietnam where he was exposed to Agent Orange and also served at Camp Lejeune, where toxic water exposure has impacted so many Marines and their families, explained Post 64 Veterans Service Officer David Green, who connects veterans with VA claims. He was a man who lived a life of service, strength, and quiet sacrifice, Green said of Parker. On March 26th, after a short and unexpected hospitalization, Gunny passed away, leaving Mary not only heartbroken, but now facing an uncertain and overwhelming path forward alone, Green said. For years, Mary stood beside her husband through everything that came with military life. Memories of deployment, the long-term health effects, and the challenges that followed his service. Now she is being asked to navigate life without him while also dealing with immediate financial pressure. Green said Mary needs to relocate to Ohio and is in urgent need of assistance to help with moving expenses. This is not just a financial need, it's about giving Mary the ability to grieve with dignity without the added fear of losing stability during one of the most difficult moments of her life. Gunny spent his life taking care of others. Mary spent her life standing beside him. Now it's our turn to stand beside her. Post 64 is Ahwatukee's only formal organization for military veterans. To help the widow of a long-term member, Post 64 has launched a fundraising effort at GoFundMe.com. We are asking for support to help Mary get through this immediate transition and secure safe, stable housing as she begins to rebuild, Green said. Any contribution, no matter the amount, will go directly toward housing and relocation expenses. If you're unable to donate, sharing this page is just as meaningful and appreciated. Let's come together to honor Gunny's legacy by assuring Mary is not left to face this alone. The Post is hoping to raise $3,000. Information can be found at GoFundMe.com/F/support Mary Parker after Gunning's passing. Up next, Food City discovers a hit with its Eladita experience by Ken Sane, AFN Managing Editor. Since opening its first Eladita shop in one of its Chandler stores in February, Food City Supermarket says demand continues to increase, so much so it's speeding up its initial plans for expansion. Customers have embraced this so much, and it's been very popular on social media. We're getting a great buzz, said Carrie Strait, the brand manager for Food City Supermarkets. They're saying, when is this going to come to my store? What we're doing is we're going to start doing some fun pop-ups. We're going to bring a portable unit, and we're going to be offering the Eladita ice cream experience at stores throughout the valley, starting as early as May. Eladita roughly translates as the little ice cream, and the new shops inside select Food City stores offer 24 flavors of ice cream and 14 flavors of paletas, popsicles. The heladita concept is something that we're very excited about because it's a traditional, artisanal, Hispanic-flavored ice cream, Street said. It's all very traditional flavors that our communities have grown up with. So how does Hispanic ice cream differ from American versions or Italian gelato? One of the flavors is tequila, which is non-alcoholic. It's almond-based, actually, so it does have a little hint in the back of it. It's just amazing. Strait said Hispanic ice cream tends to focus on natural ingredients. We try and have the most natural flavors, natural colorings, she said. It's just more about the flavors. It's more about the real freshness, Strait said. One of the most popular ones is always the limon and the coconut. This guava guarabana, which has a sour sauce. A lot of people are very interested in that because it's a non-traditional flavor. The vanilla flavor is a deeper shade of yellow than you would find in American ice cream shops. It has a lot of the egg yolk in it, so it makes it very rich and creamy, Strait said. That's what's different. Since opening its first location in Chandler, Food City has expanded to 3 additional locations. They are in Phoenix at 91st Avenue and Thomas, 44th Street and McDowell Road, and 7th Avenue at Southern Avenue. Strait said Chandler was chosen to be first because it had one of the largest footprints at Arizona Avenue and Ray Road. She said the company had to get a little more creative at locations with less space. To make room for the shop, which is near the entrance, she said they removed 2 checkout lanes. She said they will offer free tastes of the different flavors. Some of the other flavors include strawberry, cheesecake, pistachio, bubblegum, mango, coconut milk, cookies and cream, and carjeta, similar to caramel, but richer and slightly tangy. The idea is that these 4 locations will not be the only ones, Strait said. Our goal is to expand into other stores with permanent locations, but the pop-up stores give customers the opportunity to try it as it comes and visits their store. In our next story, City's Anti-Overdose Program Growing, by AFN News staff. Phoenix is continuing to expand access to naloxone, the opioid overdose-reversing drug, even as distribution slowed during the winter months, according to a new city report. The city's naloxone program distributed 3,181 overdose reversal kits between November and January, a 37% drop from the previous quarter, but a 50% increase compared with the same period a year earlier, according to a report released last week to City Council by Deputy City Manager Gina Montes and the Office of Public Health. The report said the decline reflects seasonal patterns rather than reduced demand, as outreach efforts typically slow during colder months and the holiday season. Seasonal declines during winter months are to be expected due to reduced outdoor outreach, fewer large-scale events, and decreased foot traffic, the report stated. The broader trend, however, points upward. Since launching in August 2023, the program has distributed 33,481 naloxone kits across the city. Rather than relying on large public events, Phoenix has increasingly focused on smaller, targeted outreach aimed at people most at risk of overdose. City libraries, human service programs, and the Office of Public Health remained the primary distribution hubs during the quarter, while the Community Assistance Program expanded its reach for the 2nd consecutive reporting period. Outreach efforts emphasized smaller, targeted engagements with high-risk populations, the report noted. Those efforts included events in Council Districts 4, 5, and 7, focused largely on individuals experiencing homelessness and, in some cases, victims of human trafficking. The program continues to operate at relatively low cost to the city. Phoenix spent just $5,537 on naloxone distribution during the quarter, funded entirely through opioid settlement dollars with no impact on the general fund. Now in its 3rd year, the naloxone program is shifting from rapid expansion to more strategic deployment with a focus on reaching vulnerable populations and improving data tracking. Officials said the program remains stable and aligned with anticipated seasonal distribution patterns while continuing to grow through more targeted access strategies. You're listening to East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona for today, April 23rd, focusing on the East Valley, Ahwatukee, and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Up next, Race to Council Runoff Picks Up Steam by Paul Marinak, Tribune Executive Editor. Early ballots will be mailed this week to 65,929 Tempe residents on the active early voting list as the showdown between two city council members and two challengers heads to the May 19th runoff election. Incumbents Jennifer Adams and Burdetta Hodge are hoping for a third and second term, respectively, while Brooke St. George and Bobby Nichols are vying to dash their hopes. The Maricopa County Recorder lists 85,005 registered voters in Tempe, but of that total, 27,272 are categorized as inactive. Tempe residents who aren't registered have until tomorrow, April 20th, to sign up for a chance to vote in the election. Those who are registered but not on the early voting list have until May 8th to request a mail ballot. People can do both at elections.com/maricopa.gov/voter registration. The third seat that was up for election this year was won outright in March by incumbent Councilwoman Arlene Chin, who passed the necessary threshold to avoid a runoff. Two other hopefuls were also knocked out of further competition in an election that drew only about 28% of registered voters. Hodge, who has also filed a statement of interest for a third term on the Tempe Union High School District Governing Board, is a longtime community leader. Adams is a retired social worker who spent 29 years working for the city of Tempe as a public works and human services manager. St. George, who lists herself as self-employed, was a council aide for 2 years and has said she was fired without cause because she was exploring a possible run for the council. Nichols is an assistant state attorney general. Both Nichols and St. George are running on an anti-establishment platform, saying the current council has been unresponsive to residents' concerns. The money race. Campaign financial reports filed this month with the Tempe City Clerk show that two challengers are relying on grassroots and far more limited fundraising models than the two incumbents. Hodge leads the money race, according to the financials. She has raised $88,217 and spent $82,232, leaving roughly $9,834 in cash on hand as of the most recent filing. Adams has reported lower overall totals than Hodge, but remains within the top tier of campaign fundraising. However, taken together, her last two reports show she has collected $72,416 in donations and spent $74,757, leaving a negative balance of $1,888. Campaign issues. On the issues, all four candidates outlined their positions in questionnaires for the Tempe Tribune. Adams cited Tempe's reduction in people experiencing homelessness while investing in real services like shelter, outreach, and mental health. Response. We are choosing long-term solutions over short-term fixes, and the results speak for themselves, she wrote. I'm so proud of how we've worked together with our public safety department to make Tempe safer, leading to a 21% reduction in violent crime, which is well above the national average. Adams said her priorities, if reelected, would be protecting neighborhood quality of life, maintaining public safety, and working to protect Tempe's finances from the chaos caused by state legislature and the federal government. These priorities are closely connected, and successfully addressing them will protect residents' quality of life. Hodge said Tempe City Council's biggest achievement has been maintaining fiscal stability while continuing to invest in infrastructure, safety, and innovation during a period of economic uncertainty and rapid growth. Tempe has remained competitive and livable while planning for the future, she said. As for what she wants to focus on if reelected, Hodge replied, housing affordability, stability, public safety grounded in prevention, youth investment and technology, and long-term economic resilience through workforce development, small business support, and infrastructure that prepares Tempe for future growth. Two successful challengers conceded the current council has had success, but also attacked its failures in response to the Tribune questionnaire. Nichols said he's running to reduce the cost of living for all Tempe residents, grudgingly praised council's Dorsey Station development. Asked about the council's biggest failure, he cited its unanimous approval of the proposed Coyotes anchored complex. As for what the challengers want to do if they get elected, Nichols cited improved affordability, making sure tourists and large businesses pay their fair share of taxes to ease the city's budget crunch and end unsheltered homelessness. St. George said she's running because I want to make Tempe work for everyone, and cited council's passage of a green code for builders, which she said should have been compulsory, not voluntary, the street bond package, and expanded anti-discrimination protection preventing landlords from denying rejecting would-be renters with housing vouchers. Asked about the council's failures, she said, residents increasingly feel the city only pretends to listen as major decisions still pass on 7-0 votes despite strong public backlash. These patterns have eroded trust and underscored the need for more transparent, accountable, community-focused leadership in Tempe. St. George said her priorities are homelessness, housing affordability, and our impending budget deficit. I believe we can tackle all three of these issues at once, without cutting essential services, by spending Tempe's resources more wisely on proactive and proven solutions for homelessness, and by getting creative about smart, sustainable housing development while staying within current state law. All four candidates' questionnaires and opinion pieces can be found at tempenews.com. Up next, Tempe Woman is Arthritis Walk Honoree by Tribune News staff. Diagnosed with juvenile idiopathic arthritis when she was 3, Kayla Baker has spent the last 2 decades dealing with its detrimental effects. But the 23-year-old Tempe resident wasn't alone in her struggle. Through the Arthritis Foundation, I was able to make connections with fellow children with my disease and understand that I wasn't alone in my struggles, she said. The Arthritis Foundation not only sponsored camps for children like me, but hosted fundraising events like the Walk to Cure Arthritis, where I was able to meet people, both young and old, that struggled with arthritis. This exposure and messaging was extremely important for me to have a sense of normalcy, and that it's okay for children to have this condition. And most importantly, it is okay to advocate for your health and well-being. After attending youth camps through the Arthritis Foundation throughout her childhood and serving as a youth honoree in 2015, she is excited to return and volunteer for the Arthritis Foundation as the 2026 Young Adult Honoree for the group's annual Walk for Arthritis next Saturday. Walk to Cure Arthritis, the foundation's flagship fundraising event, will take place 8 to 9:30 a.m. April 25th at Rio Vista Community Park. Funds raised through donations to the 1 Mile Charity Walk will support the foundation's ability to fund scientific research and continue to provide life-changing resources to the arthritis community in Arizona and beyond. Walk to Cure Arthritis is more than just a fundraiser. It's a celebration of strength, community, and hope, said Renee Angelis, Foundation Regional Vice President. Every step we take brings us closer to breakthroughs in arthritis research and better support for the millions of people living with the disease. The event highlights the ongoing need for awareness and support as arthritis remains the leading cause of disability in the United States, affecting people of all ages. Kayla's journey with JIA and the Arthritis Foundation has helped serve as an inspiration to pursue a career in the nonprofit sector. She has earned a bachelor's in sustainability in 2025 and is currently enrolled in a master's of public administration with an emphasis in nonprofit management. She hopes to someday impact our relationship with the planet, people, and our communities. Kayla is passionate about accessibility and human rights and looks forward to continuing that goal and good work with the Arthritis Foundation organizers pointed out. This walk would not be possible without the generous support of sponsorships like Abby V, Aetna, Arizona Arthritis and Rheumatology Associates, and Arizona United Rheumatology Alliance, organizers say. You can register for the Walk to Cure Arthritis at walktocurearthritis.org/Arizona. Up next. Man's conviction in Tempe motel slaying upheld by Tribune News staff. An Arizona appeals court panel last week upheld the conviction and life sentence of a previously convicted killer found guilty in the brutal slaying of his girlfriend in a Tempe motel in 2020. The three-judge panel of Arizona Court of Appeals Division I affirmed the convictions of Gary Lennell Cox, now 62, for first-degree murder, kidnapping, and tampering with physical evidence. Records show Cox killed his wife in 2000. He repeatedly punched her and used a knife to torture her. Cox was convicted of manslaughter and sentenced to prison, where he incurred 17 disciplinary infractions. Nevertheless, he was released from prison in 2020. The victim, Julie Leigh Munoz, was living in a motel near Rural Road and Apache Boulevard through a program for unsheltered people, and Cox had moved in with her. On the night of August 6th, a neighboring guest reported hearing loud banging coming from the room over several hours. The following morning, Cox called his brother and said Julia was dead and that he was going to prison, prompting family members to contact police. When officers arrived, they found the victim dead on the floor with multiple wounds. The room showed signs of struggle with blood, and investigators found an empty bleach bottle and wet cloth, suggesting an attempt to clean the scene. Police later located Cox at a nearby bus stop where he was arrested. He was in possession of the victim's cell phone and had visibly swollen hands, according to the ruling. On appeal, Cox argued the trial court made several errors, including denying his request for a new lawyer, preventing expert witnesses from testifying, improperly instructing the jury on the first-degree murder charge, and failing to declare a mistrial over disputed testimony. The appeals court rejected each of the arguments. Cox claimed he had irreconcilable differences with his attorney and should have been appointed a new counsel. The court found the dispute amounted to disagreements over communication style and legal strategy, not a breakdown that would prevent a fair trial. A defendant is not entitled to a meaningful relationship with an attorney, the court noted, only competent representation. Cox also argued he was denied the ability to present expert witnesses. The court found that while Cox identified potential experts, he failed to meet disclosure deadlines and did not provide actual expert opinions before trial. The judges also upheld the trial court's decision to deny additional delays, noting Cox has already been granted significant time to prepare. The appeals court also rejected Cox's claim that the jury was improperly instructed on first-degree murder charges. In addition, the court found no error in the trial judge's refusal to declare a mistrial after a police officer referenced a statement suggesting Cox admitted to the killing. Judges said the issue was adequately addressed through sustained objections, clarifying testimony and instructions to the jury to disregard improper statements. After reviewing each claim, the appeals court concluded that Cox received a fair trial and that the lower court acted within its discretion. You've been listening to East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Music is News 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 by Postador de Musicas. Remember, you can hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Please join us next time for an upcoming episode.